Your Steve Jones Show podcast is loading now. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Sunbury Motors, North 4th Street in Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf.
It's a tradition unlike any other, Tuesdays with Neil. Hello, Neil.
Tuesdays with Neil. We gotta market that. We need some t-shirts.
Absolutely. No, t-shirts, the whole deal. It'd be great.
It'll just be the Tuesdays with Neil on the front. The back will just be whatever five-minute diatribe I just led you down that had nothing to do with the questions asked.
Back, we'll have a picture of a rabbit hole.
There it is. There's my new logo for whatever company I create.
I had never heard of. Now, obviously, we've talked about the Wonderlic test for years, and I know they don't use it anymore. But I had never heard of the S2 test until this week. Had you?
I had. I am not familiar with the components of it or anything, but I knew they had looked to kind of modernize the Wonderlic test and make it more fluid and more decision-based. Beyond that, the specifics of how it was put together, what they're really looking for, is well beyond my pay grade. But it seems more in line with probably what they need. Where the Wonderlic was kind of a problem-solving thing, this is really more decision-based. How quickly their mind is working from one thing to another. I think there's a lot of utility for that within the game of football now. We'll caution everybody to know that there is no golden gun with any of this. There's no one thing that does everything. All of these are tools that they use to round out their evaluation. I don't think there's anybody that says this guy scored, 98th percentile to this, but he's a terrible football player. Let's draft him because he's really smart. I don't think that they do that. But it does help give them a sense of how they're playing the way they're playing, how they're being coached. Think of it like this. If they're excellent problem solvers, if they can adapt to this and you have cognitive evidence to show that, if they play in a scheme that isn't yours, you might view that as empirical evidence that they have a higher propensity to learn this a little bit quicker. It just might give them more of a sense of who they are as a player in ways that you can't just kind of ask and figure out. So I like the sound of it from the very little that I know of it. But as usual, what it ends up turning into is a competition. Who had the top? Who had the lowest? who can we shame in social media for this? Who are we going to grossly overpraise because of it? It's not really the real function of what they're using it for. But, Brock Purdy comes in, plays, reasonably well in a couple games. He had the highest in this last year. The company's stock is going to split next month. We know that's coming.
Right. Yeah, because what's interesting about sports jobs are very much like our jobs. For example, in our job, we can give them a resume, we can give them references, and so forth. But there's a body of work out there that either with you they can read or hear, with me they can hear, and they can make their judgment subjectively as to which direction they want to go in. Most people, they go to the office, okay, I'm going to go in and apply for a job and over Purdy Insurance, and here's my resume, here are my references and so forth, but they don't have a camera on you. When it comes to football, it's like us. They've got miles and miles of video to show whether you can make decisions or not.
Yeah, I think you might make this argument as well. I think, for example, this might be a little rabbit hole-ish, but within the Twin Cities area, the local commission in charge of this was trying to find a different way to name the two airport terminals that are here. There was they used to be called Lindbergh, and I forget what the other one was, reason why they renamed it. They hired a commission to study this and come up with recommendations for the names. This commission allegedly cost somewhere in the ballpark of like $1.5 million. Their conclusion was naming them Terminal A and Terminal B.
Yes, I know. Yeah.
Now, it obviously seems silly that that's what you're going to want to do. That's, you know, they spent all this money on it, but when you're that big, not that money available, there comes with it an expectation that you're going to spend it to ensure whatever it is. You put a lot of money behind this. You're supporting this decision. This is their reasoning. There's a lot of things that go into that. It's not as simple as, you know, get the creative team together and come up with something. It's more addressing a bunch of issues that come with that, knowing what the demographics are like, providing sound reasoning for doing what you're doing. That stuff costs money, you know, and you can't just hire two people off the street to come up with names and expect people to react positively to that. Not to suggest that spending $1.5 million on A and B is going to be met all that favorably either. But if it's, you know, coming up from Joe Sweatsock and his buddy Hal, you might have a harder time selling it. So I think to some degree there is some validity in spending with enormous financial resources that they have, spending to unturn everything that they can, to have the most data available. I think your results will vary from team to team, not only in the validity of the information, but how much they really even want to use it. You know, there might be teams that get it because they all contribute to it. The league is the one that's funding it. They all get the results, but they don't care at all. And some teams might live and die by it. It's going to totally depend. Yeah. But the idea of putting it together, I think, does make a lot of sense because, simply put, they can, so they probably should to some degree. You know, it's you have the resources to do it. You don't want to scrimp on this. This is the single most important part of your franchise. You need to select talent, and you have to hit consistently on every player that you can, and the odds of that are very, very much against you. So get as much information you can to make the best guess that you can. That's really what this is about.
Yeah, and look, and that's what it comes down to. It's what your personal taste is. There's going to be some team out there that loves Anthony Richardson, and they don't think as highly as Stroud because, again, let's get to the subjective part. It's just what your opinion and what your feeling happens to be about somebody.
Yep. If you value traits, you know who you're going to go with in that situation.
Yeah.
If you evaluate the player based on what he is playing like today instead of who he's going to be, maybe, the choice is clear. But you're exactly right. Whoever drafts those two players, the general manager is going to be very happy that they drafted. We know that we're going to hear that after it.
All right. Exactly. That's exactly what they're going to tell everybody. Overall in this draft, everybody, of course, will concentrate on round one. I got it. But this is a seven-round draft, and a lot of really good players come out in those seven rounds that help teams. The Steelers, in the overall draft profile, in the end, when they're done with seven rounds, positionally, what do you think they have to take?
For me, and it's interesting because, you know, I've always considered Mike Tomlin to be maybe the best podium coach in the NFL as far as getting a message across that seems like it has value, and it has absolutely none. He'll refute this for reasons that make me laugh, but they have a glaring hole at left tackle, and there's no way objectively you can tell me that they don't. They're going to draft a tackle. And along with that, call this 1A and 1B. I'm not even sure what comes first. They only have one cornerback signed next year. That's Patrick Peterson, and he's going to be 35, due $8 million. Odds are not very good. They want Patrick Peterson on the team next year. They need a cornerback. I don't see there's any way, any scenario at all, that they do not address both of those positions, probably pretty quickly into the draft. I would consider those to be glaring holes. Now, what Mike Tomlin's definition of a glaring hole is, you know, likely to be different than mine, but they have a long-term for both of these spots, if not a short-term need. So I would feel if the prospects available at those positions match up with where they're drafting, that's where they're going to go. Once each, maybe they pick up a corner late as well. You need a good amount of those. That's why James Pierre is still on the team. He's a great veteran, inexpensive option, but you can't count on him being on the team next year, and he's not signed. So they need to bring in somebody, and I can't help but think their offense is going to be significantly improved just with the absence of Dan Moore. Putting somebody else into that spot who's got some ability will definitely raise it up a little bit higher than the 15 points a game they scored for half the season last year. I'm not blaming all of that on Dan Moore, but when you have a tackle that can't protect on a three-step drop and doesn't block particularly well in the ground game, I don't know what you want, but you've got to get at least an average player in there. And that, to me, is a glaring hole. But, I'm sure Coach Tomlin wants to protect his player a little bit as well. But they know they need a tackle, and they're going to find one in this draft.
Well, they're in a good spot because they have two of the top 32 picks because of that really surprising Bears trade for Chase Claypool. So they get the first pick of the second round, which I find to be interesting. It also doesn't rule out the possibility, and you and I did talk about this 2-3 weeks ago. Now, Patrick Peterson can always play safety, too.
Yeah, there's some utility to that. I think they have their eyes on that. I think it makes sense. We have to look at it, a lot of sub-package defensive football.
Yes.
Having at least one sort of positionless player. When I say positionless, I don't mean that literally, but Patrick Peterson, if you want to call him a cornerback, you can. Where is he lining up? How is he filling on the field? What is he, what are his checks? What are his responsibilities? That should be more indicative of what position he's playing as opposed to what, the media guide says that he plays. He doesn't have to be an outside cornerback playing straight-up man and mirroring a guy all over the field. He can be a cornerback is one of the more misleading names in sports now for what they're doing. You have a slot cornerback, which by definition is contradictory. He's not on the corner. He's literally inside of the corner. That's his job. That is the type of role Patrick Peterson can play. Now, imagine that, but he's off the ball 12 yards. Technically, he's a safety, right? But what if he has man responsibilities? That indicates more that he is a cornerback. And really, neither of those descriptions fit anymore with a lot of what NFL teams are doing defensively in the sub-package era. So, yes, you can drop him back and alleviate the short space stuff, which, I'll be honest, I have some concerns with for him. I don't think he's great at flipping his hips, running straight downfield without help, but you also have one of the best free safeties in the game playing center field over the top of that. He doesn't have to be in the guy's pocket. They got him over the top. Can he take a guy in man across the middle on a post? Maybe not, but again, he's playing in a defense that has back help. So if he's one of those people, if he's playing back or he's playing underneath, it's not really the true traditional cornerback position, but he can play how the Steelers define a safety in like a cover three look. He can do that. That's probably more befitting of his skills today. He doesn't need to be Minkah Fitzpatrick to be a safety, I guess is what I'm saying. There are middle grounds to this that can fit where his skill set is at his age.
Yeah, because I know right now for college football, I'm getting ready for the upcoming season, and I've already gone through seven teams, so I'm going up to team eight. And then on the college level, I'm seeing 3-3-5s. I'm seeing 4-2-5s. I mean, a lot of five defensive back looks based on today's game, and that's what I'm getting ready for, and that's what you're talking about, because now those five become, in some ways, with the exception of a couple of guys like an amoeba.
Yeah, in a lot of ways, that's what it is. I would even say it's XX5, XX6. The emphasis today is on your secondary. It's not on your front. You can put – the Steelers have been doing this for years and still argue with people. They haven't played a true 3-4 since Casey Hampton's final season. It's not a 3-4 defense. They don't use a zero technique nose tackle. There are situations in which they will, but that's not the definitive characteristic of their defense. In fact, the only thing that's consistent is really they pretty much, short of short yardage situations, they pretty much have 5 or 6 defensive backs on the field. Another reason they need another cornerback, they'll have one next year. You have to find 7 more of them if you want to be able to field something. But they need to define doing based on coverage for obvious reasons. They're throwing the ball all the time. They're using routinely at least 3 receivers on a field, and their running backs are small slot receivers nowadays. So you need fewer linebackers, probably fewer defensive linemen, and more coverage guys that can handle, a bunch of fireflies moving out all over the field on any particular down and distance. So it's more instructive to look at coverage as opposed to how they're aligning their front 6 or their front 7. There's something to be said about a team that has 3 down consistently, where those guys are lined up, because, over under, that's going to dictate what your coverage is anyway, certainly how you fit the run. But overall, a lot more of it is what your cornerbacks are doing after the snap and what your middle safety is doing. I wouldn't even necessarily call it a free safety anymore. Are they coming down? Are they to the box? Are they playing that deep center field role? Are they lining up on guys and man? That's more indicative of how a defense is looking to challenge an offense, as opposed to really, where the way it used to be, where your nose tackle is, where your buck linebacker is, because there isn't a fullback. And the formations are much more balanced than they were traditionally 25 years ago. So a lot more to watch within a secondary now, as opposed to what we're used to seeing with that kind of alpha middle linebacker dictating everything.
30 seconds or less. Should the NFL draft be declared a national holiday with time off?
I would.
You're thinking.
there's a reason. Yes, I feel that it should be. The question we get into, though, is that in my world, who's going to write about it? That's sort of why it's like the more we go, the more we have to continue to go. And it kind of gets to a collapsing point. Usually I'm borderline angry come Sunday night. You're tired of all of it, but it's a great time. I love this time of year. I'm looking forward to it. This is a great week for me.
It's a great week for all of us. We enjoy it. It's amazing how just the simple process of handing a card with a name on it is really cool.
I remember it wasn't that long ago that this was, you had rounds 1 through 3 in the primetime slot or whatever it was, but that isn't all that far removed. And they did basically the whole thing the same day. that was a real test of endurance. Yeah. If you were a fan, you knew who your team took in the 7th round. You didn't have to wait for the newspaper the next day. You stayed up and watched the whole thing. 14 hours of draft content. Oh, I'm a strange person.
But that's what we did. That's what we did. We watched all of it and enjoyed it. And when ESPN, I think it was Chet Simmons was the head of ESPN at the time. And he went to Pete Rozelle and said, "We'd like to televise it." And I guess Rozelle looked at him and went, "You want to do what?" He said, "All we're doing is picking guys."
And you can tell right away from those early ones, they're not used to the microphones. They're awkward and weird, but it's basically like a commodities exchange, They're not just, we don't get why this is interesting. Why do you guys care so much? And they've got the section in the back of the fans, usually the Jets fans, the really geeky looking guys all done up. And they're just screaming about everything, yelling because they did the work, They had to go out, they couldn't even buy these magazines. They had to write them themselves. So they've been taking notes all season and all these people. And it's just fascinating how much it's grown. I get a big kick out of that.
Oh my goodness, it's unbelievable. But the NFL looked at him. What are you, nuts? What are you doing? Is Andy Cards? And they used to have those helmet phones.
Oh, yeah. Yep. Yep. Who didn't want
Every
one of
table
those?
Had one, and you could buy the replica on the table.
Oh, it was so awesome. What a great idea. You know what? Sell those now. It's cell phone version of it with that as your charger. That'll sell.
Yeah.
Retro
no doubt.
Thing. I would buy that.
I invite you back, by the way, for another edition of Tuesdays with Neil next Tuesday.
Absolutely. Tuesday's the best day.
Thanks, my friend.
Thank you. You guys have a good one.